6. This is Radio Times. I'm Artie Moscoane. The Temple University Symphony Orchestra's recording of music of Ansel Adams' America has been nominated for a Grammy Award for Best Instrumental Composition. It was commissioned for Temple University and 6 other orchestras and composed by the late Dave Brubeck and his son Chris. The music is inspired by the beautiful and now iconic black and white photographs that Adams took of Yosemite and other grand Western landscapes. Interestingly, Ansel Adams studied piano before turning to photography. Well, we asked Chris Brubeck to join us today on Radio Times. A performer and composer, toured and recorded with his father. He plays bass, trombone, piano, guitar, and he sings as well. He's a leader of his own groups, including Chris Brubeck's Triple Play, and he collaborates with his drummer brother Daniel with their Brubeck Brothers Quartet. And Chris Brubeck, nice to have you with us on Radio Times, and congratulations.
Hey, thank you. It's my pleasure to be with you.
Nice to have you with us. And also with us is Robert Stroker. He's Vice Provost for the Arts and Dean of the Center for the Arts at Temple University. He's also executive producer of 3 Grammy-nominated BCMD, that's Boyer College of Music and Dance recordings, including 2 that we'll be playing today, Music of Ansel Adams' America, and a piece composed by Bill Cunliffe, also called Overture, Waltz, and Rondo. And Robert Stroker, nice to have you with us on Radio Times. Congratulations to you as well.
Thank you so much.
You're very welcome. Chris, let me begin with you, and I don't know if this is bittersweet or not. I know that your dad died just a couple of hours before this announcement of this Grammy nomination. How are you doing?
Well, I'm doing really better than I thought I would do because, in a sense, I've been preparing myself ever since I was a little kid. I remember in 1958, Dave went on a long State Department tour, and he was gone about 4 months. And that's a long time when you're a little kid. And of course, you know, there's a lot of people who have, you know, fathers that are in the Navy or something, and they do that too. But Dave toured the planet so much of his life that I just figured someday, especially when he was getting to be 75, 80, 85, 90, you know, that he would come out and do a tour and never come back. And you know, I still sort of think of him as being on some great big tour in the cosmos, and
that's a nice image.
And we collaborated so much. I mean, it's not like he passed away, and I have a lot of regrets. I don't have a big bucket list of I wish I did that. I wish I did this. I kind of did everything I wished I could have done with him, which is a fabulous position to be in. So I'm doing well, and our whole family. Of course, we miss him. But we all are doing pretty well for the same reason I just stated.
And is this the last composition that he composed and obviously composed with you?
It's certainly the last he composed with me, and he was always writing little things. But I think this may have been the last orchestral piece, certainly. Mm-hmm. And it was a little hard to convince him even to get into it because he said he was too old to embark on such a thing. So there was a beautiful conspiracy with my mother and my wife to get him involved in this piece.
Well, Robert Stroker, let me get you in on the conversation. So how did Temple University get involved with Chris and Dave Brubeck and this piece of music?
Well, first of all, Chris, hello.
It's you two great. Know each other, yeah, I know.
Oh, yeah. Robert's wonderful.
So is Chris.
Yes.
Found our way together through a supporter of the music college at Temple University, Susan Carson, who's on our board of visitors and a patron of the arts. She lives out in California. She really came up with this idea of bringing together Ansel Adams and the wonderful creative music of the Brubecks. And I know she approached myself, she approached Chris, and Chris mentioned that he really had to work in getting his father on board with this project. But I tell you, it's been such a unique and wonderful experience for the young people at Temple to be able to have this experience to work with such legends and such a musical and wonderful family, the Brubecks.
And Chris, some interesting parallels between Ansel Adams and your father, Dave Brubeck, in that they have some roots in Northern California. Help us understand what you see as the parallels between these two very creative individuals.
Well, I got to say that I, you know, of course knew what Ansel Adams meant to, you know, sort of the visual culture of America and photography, and I knew some of his photographs. But what really, got me hooked into Ansel Adams' story was reading his autobiography. He's also a wonderful writer, and I would recommend anyone who wants to read a great American book to read his book. Susan Carson is the one that told me that Ansel Adams was on his way to becoming a pianist, which you mentioned earlier, yeah. before he turned to photography. And after I read his book, I started seeing that if I could get my father to know more about Ansel Adams, he'd really start resonating with him and why they sort of belong together in a project. Because they were both kind of created their very original art form and visionary practice of it, because they came out of isolation in Northern California. Like, if my father had grown up in New York City, he probably wouldn't have all been the original force he was in jazz, because he would have been surrounded by bebop and all the expectations and all the cliches and all the hip things that you were supposed to do. But instead, he was riding a horse. And when he was riding around horses, so he wouldn't die from boredom, he started sort of practicing polyrhythms, you know. And this kind of isolation bred a different kind of creativity. And for Ansel Adams, it was crawling around the mountains, you know, setting up, seeing where a good sunrise shot was, freezing his ass off overnight to get that right shot, you know. Again, he was isolated. But by the time they were through their art forms, Dave brought jazz into the respect of being in colleges, along with my mom, who was his manager, who had that idea. And, you know, and a photography and an art museum was considered a radical joke before Ansel Adams and a few others really cracked that code. So that's part of the similarities I see in them as artists.
And I do want to play, we pulled out some sections from the music, but let me ask you, Robert Stroker, I mean, it must be wonderful to be able to perform and record something where the composers are still alive and you can talk to them and you can ask questions. I would think that's so important to interpreting a piece of music.
Absolutely. And that's the reason why we do these projects. It's to provide this opportunity for the students in the music college at Temple University. It's a unique opportunity to actually create a new work with a composer and then have the learning experience of performing it and then going in the recording studio mm-hmm. and recording, which is a whole other learning experience for these kids on how to produce the best sound, how to work with microphones, and be able to work with such artists as the Brubecks mm-hmm. and Cunliffe is just a unique experience, and that's what we're about at Temple and the Music College.
And were there specific questions that you had about this piece of music as an executive producer?
Well, I was thrilled. The whole idea was exciting. We're always looking for bold new initiatives and ideas and, again, experiences for our students. And the thought of our students being able to create this unique piece, which, and it's truly unique, was something we just couldn't pass on. Not only performing, working with the Brubecks, but then the whole recording aspect mm-hmm. was just so special for the students.
Well, let's play an excerpt of Music of Ansel Adams, America. And we pulled this about 5 minutes into the piece, and again, written by the late Dave Brubeck and his son, our guest Chris Brubeck, performed by the Temple University Symphony Orchestra. Again, the composition has been nominated for a 2013 Grammy in the Best Instrumental Composition category. This is under the direction of Professor Luis Biava. The piece was commissioned by Temple University's Boyer College of Music and Dance, recorded at the Temple Performing Arts Center, and released on Boyer's record label, BCMND Records. Let's listen.
Thank you.
And that's an excerpt drawn from about 5 minutes into music of Ansel Adams' America, composed again by the late Dave Brubeck and his son Chris Brubeck, who is our guest on Radio Times. And Chris, I have to say, I love this piece of music, and I love the way you're passing the themes from one instrument to another as we listen to that piece.
Oh, thank you very much. And hearing this and knowing the images that go with it remind me that another aspect of this piece is that we're not just showing photographs of that taken by Ansel Adams, but we're actually sort of showing his life story. There are other pieces in the orchestral world that, you know, it started off with the trend of like, oh, let's have Gustav Holst and the Planets and, you know, that kind of thing.
Right.
But we said we finally were the only artist to be able to break through to get permission to use these images from the Ansel Adams Photographic Trust. And we wanted to say we've got something unique, which is the great, iconic Ansel Adams, but we want to tell something about his story. So when in that passage you just heard, there's sort of this triumphant theme. It was like, boom, 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 boom. We have a great picture of, not by Ansel Adams, but of Ansel Adams, where he's got his, like, a piece of plywood on top of his old Woody station wagon. He's got a tripod up there. He sort of looks like Harrison Ford, Raiders of the Lost Ark. He's out on a mission to photograph some sort of mountaintop, and it has that kind of energy. And then it got kind of romantic, and that we also speak to one of the reasons he left piano was he spent the summer in Yosemite, and he needed a place to practice piano, and that was in a general store. And there was an upright piano back there. And the person that owned the general store had a beautiful young daughter who Ansel fell in love with. So it was not only the mountains, but it was romance. And you know, they eventually had children and got married and everything. Or actually, I should say that they got married and had children. Those were the old days.
When you did it in that order. Very quickly, Chris, because we're almost up in a break here. Did you go and go to Yosemite, for instance, and look at what Ansel Adams had photographed out there?
Only after the premiere, oddly enough. I visited there in my soul and spirit, time traveling through his pictures. But then I saw the real thing after the premiere, and it blew me away.
Well, that's Chris Brubeck. He's as a well-known performer, composer, well-known name as well. Toured a lot with his dad, jazz pianist and composer Dave Brubeck. And he and his dad composed this piece of music that we are talking about, and it's called Ansel Adams America. And it has been nominated for a Grammy this year, and we're also talking with Robert Stroker. He's dean of the Center for the Arts at Temple University. It's the Temple University Symphony Orchestra that recorded this piece and is up for a Grammy. We're going to take a very short break, get back to our conversation. We're going to play some more music as well. So stay with us. We'll be right back.
Supporting WHYY, the Fabric Workshop and Museum presents So Percussion, a Brooklyn-based modern percussion ensemble playing music inspired by the compositions of Steve Reich and John Cage on Saturday, February 2nd at 6:30 p.m. Also at FWM on the 2nd, artist talk and opening reception from 6 to 8 p.m. For Tacita Dean's 2008 work, Merce Cunningham performs Stillness, 6 performances, 6 films. Details at fabricworkshopandmuseum.org.
The WHYY Winter Membership Campaign starts this week. With the WHYY Buyback Program building momentum, we could shorten the drive. For every 750 donations we receive, we'll eliminate a full day of on-air pledging. That's less on-air pitching and more news and information. But we need to hear from you right now to make it happen. Make your donation at whyy.org/support.
Next time in Studio 360, Sue Grafton began her series of mystery novels with A is for Alibi. And she's been working her way through the alphabet, 22 down, W, X, Y, and Z to go.
I am hoping that by the time I write X, somebody will invent an entirely new crime.
Novelist Sue Grafton, next time in Studio 360 from PRI and WNYC.
Tonight at 9 on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoane, and we're talking about and playing selections from music of Ansel Adams' America, composed by Chris and Dave Brubeck, performed by the Temple University Symphony Orchestra, nominated for a Grammy Award this year, and another composition composed by Bill Cunliffe, Overture, Waltz, and Rondo, recorded by the same orchestra, also received a Grammy nomination in the same category. And again, our guests are Chris Brubeck and Robert Stroker, who's Dean of the Center for the Arts at Temple University and executive producer of these two recordings. And Robert, it's always interesting when we're playing either music or someone's work in the movies. It's interesting for me to watch them listen to themselves or their handiwork. I was watching you as we were listening to music of Ansel Adams' America. What were you listening for?
Well, I every time I hear this piece or our recordings, what I'm really thinking is I'm just so proud of the work these students and the faculty at Temple that have made this happen. It's a real terrific outcome measure of receiving the Grammy nomination, but the quality of this work and the amount of time these students worked on this piece, rehearsals, so many hours and performances, and the faculty. We have just so fortunate to have outstanding faculty in the music college. And that's what I'm really thinking. And yeah. It's such a great feeling. And of course, the recording is wonderful. The music's wonderful. And I'm just so proud. I'm proud of the entire group.
But do you also have a problem in that you have two pieces up for a Grammy in the same category?
You know, that's a good problem to have.
It's a good problem to have.
It's really, yeah, and we were just so thrilled, and the students were so thrilled when this all came out. And I think there were 367 entries for this category, and for us to receive two of the final five nominations, we're very humbled by it, and just at the same time, thrilled.
Well, Chris Brubeck, let me go back to you, and I'm curious about how you then worked with your dad composing this piece of music, and whether there was anything unusual about how you worked together, or whether this is sort of how the two of you worked together over his lifetime.
It's pretty unusual for two composers to work on the same thing anyhow.
Right.
So I guess it really was kind of unusual. But my father, once he was getting into his 80s, didn't necessarily want to slip and fall on his ass in the winters of New England. So he started going down to Florida. and to finish the seed I planted about how we got Dave hooked on this, is a very sweet thing, is that my mom, who was a radio actress, that's how they met in college. That's what her major was. Because believe it or not, there really wasn't TV then.
I remember those days, actually, but no, go ahead.
Only intellectually, I'm sure. But
no, actually not, but go ahead.
But anyhow, it was, it was incredible. When we were kids, you know, we used to go to sleep, and she would read Winnie the Pooh, and everyone had a voice, you know, that was different. It was like listening to a Disney animation soundtrack.
Oh, that's great.
But, you know, she was so into reading that she got into this sweet habit of reading books to Dave. Even as adults, you know, and that's how they would often go to sleep at night, is reading a book together. And so we said, okay, Mom, next book, I'm sneaking you Ansel Adams' autobiography. And that's really how he started finding out about it and how he got hooked. And when he finally said, yeah, now I understand. Because the other thing was that Ansel Adams had a lot of problems as a child, being dyslexic and things like that. And it's very unique about his father, especially in those days. I mean, to put Ansel Adams in perspective, he was about 5 years old when the great earthquake in San Francisco hit. And that's why his nose was so broken looking, because part of the chimney in his house fell off and busted his nose. And his father actually took him out of public schools and let him go to the Grand Pacific Exposition, I think it was called. Those buildings still stand on the edge of Golden Gate Park in San Francisco. And say, okay, absorb all the cultures around the world. Listen to the organ recitals, you know, and really let him think out of the box and learn out of the box. And Dave was like that too. His ears were always better than his classical kind of training. So Dave started writing themes on a little keyboard, and he would send them up to me, and we were both looking at the same coffee table book called 400 Photographs of Ansel Adams. And he would see a picture and it would inspire a theme. He'd send it to me, and I'd say, well, Dad, that's a nice theme, but you can't just bring up a theme and leave it there. We got to develop it. And then I would develop the theme, orchestrate it, expand it. And then, of course, that would lead to needing more pictures to go with expanded music.
And, you know, that's perhaps too long-winded, but a little key of how this thing went, sort of leapfrogging between music and photographs.
And I'm curious, when you say send, was this through email, or was he actually using snail mail, or how did you send information back and forth?
Oh, no. My father was old school enough that it was definitely just sending, you know, pieces of paper with what I call chicken scratch. But where I got a little higher tech, and believe me, I'm no Stephen Hawking when it comes to this stuff, is that I have a musical notation program that a lot of people have called Finale. And for those of you who aren't musicians, because it involves a computer, please don't think that means a computer wrote this piece. It's like in the same way, if you're an author and you use a typewriter, you know, the typewriter didn't write the piece. But with Finale, you can use this computer interface to create good-looking music. It looks like published sheet music. And it also has the unique ability that once you put something in the score, you can actually have it play back on digital instrument samples. So it doesn't sound as good as the real orchestra, right, but it certainly gives you an idea of what it's going to sound like. So I was working from Dave's chicken scratch, transforming it, and then when he got back from Florida in the springtime, he started hearing, instead of having to sweat and play all the different things he was hearing or that I was hearing, I could just have the computer playback, you know, a sort of filled out orchestration of where I wanted to go. And as he said, and this is someone who's written, you know, 18 major cantatas and oratorios, wow, in the old days, you couldn't tell if you liked what you wrote until the dress rehearsal, and then it was too late.
That's a great story. And I have to say to our listeners, Chris, is that you sent us the score. I'm looking at it right here, Ansel Adams America, and it includes the photographs, but it also includes all sorts of interesting notes and penciled in comments, including one that I wrote down, thinking too hard and not connecting. I don't even know what that exactly refers to, but it's a chance, at least for me and for those of us on Radio Times, to sort of get inside some of the thinking and composing that went into this piece of music.
Yeah, and actually that reminds me of one comment I wanted to make about the great students at the Boyer College of Music and the Temple recording. You know, you can only write so much information down on a sheet of paper to convey what you want musically. And, you know, there's been other good professional orchestras like the Baltimore Symphony who have played this piece. But uniquely, Temple University spent lots of time playing this piece, not only at the Kimmel Center, but up at Lincoln Center. And they saw the pictures enough that they knew why they played every damn note in the score and how it related to the photograph, which is something I talked to my dad about. You know, the top orchestra in the world, they're busy, they're pros, they cost hundreds of thousands of dollars, and they wouldn't take the time to understand the nuance of the music. And that's what's so great about how this integrates, you know, with the images and how they shaded the music. And that's a great tribute to Luis Biava, who also always got that kind of information out of his students. And I wanted to say also, you said, isn't it great for conductors and orchestras to be able to work with living composers?
Yes.
Considering the egos of many conductors, I think they consider it kind of a pain in the butt to have a live person around a composer, because then they have a different final authority other than their own.
Asking a lot of irritating questions, I guess.
Right. But Luis Biava was just an angel to work with. He just was, he's a gentle, sweet soul, and the kids there respect him so much. I mean, he's very much old-school, European, charming, laid-back guy, you know, and he's conducting all these kids that were raised on video games and, you know, a whole different kind of way of the brain developing. Obviously, they're a select group of that generation because they are good enough to play instruments and be in that orchestra. But they respect and loved him, and that kind of love and spiritual warmth, I think, comes through in this recording.
Well, I do want to play another section from the recording, but Robert Stroker, I just want to give you a chance to respond to what Chris Brubeck was saying, and I'm sure your ears are ringing.
Well, absolutely. And again, you know, Chris is such a wonderful musician, and he's also a wonderful teacher, I want to say. And, you know, you don't always see that in his bio, but his work with our students was just wonderful. Coming into rehearsal, working with these young people, and just the whole creative process. It all doesn't always work like this. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of egos, but this was one of those projects that just worked. It was just a home run.
Well, let's play another selection. This is about, I think, 12, 13, 14 minutes into Music of Ansel Adams' America, again written by the late Dave Brubeck and his son, our guest Chris Brubeck, performed by the Temple University Symphony Orchestra, nominated for a 2013 Grammy in the Best Instrumental Composition category. Again, under the direction of Professor Luis Biava, the piece was commissioned by Temple's Boyer College of Music and Dance, recorded at the Temple Performing Arts Center, and released on Boyer's record label BCMND Records. Excerpt of Music of Ansel Adams' America, written by the late Dave Brubeck and his son, our guest Chris Brubeck. And Chris, I just wanted to ask you a very specific question. I'm so taken by the rhythms that we heard in that 2 minutes section from Music of Ansel Adams' America. What were we listening to? Do we have Chris?
Accurately to some of that three against two riding the horse stuff.
Oh, interesting.
The image that triggered that theme from Dave was a picture that a photograph that Ansel Adams took of a mission in the Southwest. And, you know, the basic time is 1, 2, 3, 4, ba-da, ba-da, bum, ba. But in the marimba, it's going da-da, 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 da-da. It's going in three against the four. And the Temple kids pull that off. And it's also, I'm very proud that the bass players are playing on the offbeat. So it's like almost like an authentic kind of Mexican groove. Instead of playing on one, they're playing on a delayed two and one. So they pulled it off. And then at the end, on the fade, what you're hearing is part of a reflection of Dave's kind of crazy kind of stride piano. It almost comes out of like a honky-tonk when he used to play for the Mining Caps when he was a kid. And that visually, another thing that's great about this piece is that when we think of Ansel Adams, we think about, you know, moonscapes and big, you know, towering mountains and stuff. But we show, there's like almost different movements within this piece. And we go into, you know, you don't think of Ansel Adams and portraits of Native Americans from the Southwest, pictures of pueblos. I mean, that's what that whole section was filled with.
Well, and it's interesting when we look at the instrumentation here, a lot of percussion. Should we be surprised by that, Chris Brubeck?
Well, I guess not. Yeah, percussion can be great. And plus, there's always a lot of percussion players in college orchestras. We've got to give them something to do.
keep them out of trouble. I'm curious to you, Robert Stroker, and even just where this was recorded.
Yes, we did.
And how it was recorded.
Yeah, this was something that we recorded, actually, in our new Performing Arts Center at Temple University, right on Broad Street. And it's a wonderful, wonderful new performance center where we're doing most of our concerts. Wow. And it's also, and you never know with a space on how it's going to be regarding recording, It's a wonderful facility. Actually, three of the pieces that we recorded in there are now received Grammy nominations, and it's just a beautiful, wonderful place to enjoy music.
Well, let me play another an excerpt of a different piece, also up for a Grammy and also performed by the Temple University Symphony Orchestra. This is Overture, Waltz, and Rondo, and it's written by former Temple University music faculty member Bill Conliff, performed, as I said, by the Temple University Symphony Orchestra, and it's in competition with music of Ansel Adams' America. And again, under the direction of Professor Luis Biava, the piece was commissioned by Temple University's Boyer College of Music and Dance, recorded at the Temple Performing Arts Center, released on Boyer's record label BCM&D. And we're going to hear Bill Conliff on the piano and also Terrell Stafford on trumpet. Again, that's Overture, Waltz, and Rondo, written by former Temple University music faculty member Bill Conliff, and performed by the Temple University Symphony Orchestra, and up for a Grammy this year. And I'm curious to you, Robert Stroker, about a minute or so before we have to take our second break, how this piece happened.
Yep. Well, Bill is a wonderful, wonderful musician, and we were very fortunate to have him on faculty several years ago in our jazz department, and he decided to move back to L.A. He's doing a lot of writing for movies and recording, and that's really his place right now. But we really wanted, and we have continued this relationship with him. And he wrote a piece for us several years ago that was nominated for a Grammy, Fourth Stream La Banda. And he is just an amazing, again, very much like Chris, amazing musician, amazing composer, and a wonderful, wonderful teacher, and I want to add, person. And these composers, Bill and Chris, they provide such a unique opportunity for our students to be able to work with professionals out there. And Bill is just, again, wonderful musician, and I brought this piece, this idea up to him, and he just ran with it.
Wow. That's Robert Stroker. He is Dean of the Center for the Arts at Temple University. Also with us, Chris Brubeck, a performer, composer, and we are talking about music today on Radio Times. Stay with us. We'll take a very short break, and then we'll be right back. Don't go away.
Inishnua Theater Company supports WHYY, dedicated to staging contemporary plays from Ireland, England, Scotland, and Wales. Inishnua is currently presenting Scottish playwright D.C. Jackson's My Romantic History, directed by Tom Ring, February 5th through February 24th at the Off Broad Street Theater, 1636 Sansom Street. More information is online at tellthestory.us. tellthestory.us.
On the next Fresh Air, how the U.S. military came to embrace counterinsurgency as an approach to the fighting in Iraq and why it's failed in Afghanistan. We'll talk with journalist and historian Fred Kaplan, author of The Insurgents, David Petraeus and the Plot to Change the American Way of War. Join us.
This afternoon at 3 and again tonight at 7 on WHYY.
I'm Robin Young. Join us next time for the news and these stories here and now. What direction will Egypt take? Violent protests, a new president who's imposed curfews and a state of emergency, much like the old president did. Also, why are people paying to crawl through mud and live wires? We'll look at the world of Tough Mudder, Public Radio's daily digest of news and culture here and now.
Today at noon on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscowane, and we've been talking about the Temple University Symphony Orchestra's recording of music of Ansel Adams' America, composed by the late Dave Brubeck and his son Chris Brubeck, the music inspired by those iconic black and white photographs that Ansel Adams took of Western landscapes. Chris Brubeck joining us by telephone, as he has been this full hour, and Robert Stroker here with us in our Philadelphia studios. And Chris, in preparation for the show today, I was remembering that tribute to your dad at the Kennedy Center Awards that I happened to be watching, and I have to say, I'm sure every father's fantasy is to have, you know, have what happened on that stage that day as you and your brothers performed for your dad and paid an enormous tribute to what who seemed to be an extraordinary person.
Yeah, you know, I think that's true, and it's probably, you know, one of the highlights of our family's, you know, artistic and family personal life together, and, and, you know, heartfelt reactions to that moment, like if you watch the video of that, which is out on YouTube, you know, you'll see Robert De Niro lean over and kiss Dave on the forehead.
Yes.
And by the way, he was one of the very first people that wrote, literally on the afternoon that my dad passed away, he FedExed a note to my mom. And and also, you know, at a party afterwards, Jon Stewart, the comedian, if you can imagine him waxing poetic about what it would mean to him if his sons ever had a chance to play for him in an event like that, you know. And a lot of people don't know, he was totally surprised. There was a deep conspiracy. The CIA was jealous of our ability to keep a secret. I rode down with my sister in the car and never let her know that I was going to play for Dave. My parents didn't know. I had brothers that were hiding in different hotels. My own son didn't know. And I had dinner the night before we were going to do this. It was a total, total surprise. And it was captured on film, and the producers were just thrilled to have that moment. It was a very exciting night for my dad and our whole family.
And what did he say to you when he finally caught up with you that night?
I'll tell you, the next time I saw him, because, you know, I saw him up in the box with President Obama, which, by the way, it's pretty poetic that Dave, who was a big champion of civil rights in his career and performed with an African-American bass player named Eugene Wright, and when he was huge with colleges, there was many situations where either he didn't play at the big universities in the South or was the first guy to force their hand and said, I'm not playing unless you let me go on stage with my entire group, including our black bass player. And then, you know, they would have this sort of panic phone call between the provost of the school and Lester Maddox or George Wallace or whoever the hell it was, you know, and he would triumph. So for us to be playing at the Kennedy Center and for Dave to get this honor with President Obama as our first African-American president, and also a guy in his very first book, Dreams of My Father, talked about how he went with his father, and he only saw his father about 2 weeks in his whole life, to the Honolulu Symphony to see a concert, and it was Dad playing with us kids. So it was really like a big, giant circle of life and patterns and advancement in this country, and Dave was so thrilled about that opportunity. And when I saw him at a different party about 2 in the morning, I'll go into this room, and on his knees in front of Dave talking to him, I see Sting talking to him about odd time signatures, and behind him is Bruce Springsteen. And afterward, my dad says, so is this guy, Bruce Springfield, is he a big deal? You know, I'm like, yeah, Dad, this is some big stuff here. You
know? Kind of like being alone in the West there, right? Not knowing what's going on in the world. That's great.
Well, Dave has lived in his own creative universe. And, I mean, I kind of know what he is. Like, I tell you the truth, I really enjoyed listening to Bill Cunliffe's piece because as a composer, writer, I'm so busy writing my own stuff, I really don't have time to absorb other people's things, you know? And when I'm that close to talking about Bill, I want to mention that it was very sweet that on the day that my father passed away, I was traveling back from a gig with my group Triple Play in Nebraska,
I was on airplanes all day, got to my family home, you know, embraced, hugged, cried, finally got home to my house, looked at my computer for the first time that day. More than 400 emails poured in from around the world.
Wow.
And there was one that said, congratulations. And I thought, that was weird. And it was from Bill Cunliffe, because he said, it's such an honor to be your friend, and I'm so glad to tell you that we've been nominated together.
Oh,
so
my goodness gracious.
You know, if one's wondering about rivalry, no, it's just like a brotherhood.
Well, I do want to play a completely different piece of music, but let me just ask you, Robert Stroker, just I want to make sure our listeners know a little bit about you, which is that you taught in high school, you taught music, or was it junior high school?
No, actually all levels of music.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So you were a public school music teacher?
Yep.
And you're a percussionist?
Absolutely. And I just want to say, growing up in Detroit, my father just loved the music of Dave Brubeck, and the Time Out album was always out. And as a kid, I would listen to it over and over and over again. And it was such inspiration for me to pursue my career in music and do all the things I've done. And I have to tell you, on a personal level, being at this concert, having Dave Brubeck sit next to me, and then having him sign that album that meant so much to my father, just a special, special moment for me personally.
Wow. A lot of love today on Radio Times. Chris, I want to play, this is we're going to hear sort of partway into this piece called Mighty Mrs. Hippie. After about a 3-minute blues intro, we're going to hear you introduce Mighty Mrs. Hippie, performing with your band Triple Play from the album Live at Arthur Zankel Music Center. You're playing piano, and we'll also hear Joel Brown, Frank Brown, and Peter Madcat Ruth. Let's listen.
Now, I know what you're saying to yourself. Good God Almighty, this is the longest intro I've ever sat through at any concert. And it'd be about right, except we're going to change it up on you. The reason we do this song is it's going to turn into a 5-4 boogie-woogie. And no one's insane enough to do that. Sort of like rubbing your head and patting your stomach at the same time. But it's gonna go something like this. Mississippi, Mississippi on my mind. One good woman with a mean old man she left behind. He was a riverboat captain, and he sure ain't no friend of mine. His name was Mr. Hippie, but it's the Mississippi I adore.
Mighty Mrs. Hippie, that's featuring Chris Brubeck on piano with Joel Brown, Frank Brown, and Peter Madcat Ruth. Chris Brubeck, was there any other, I guess, occupation that you consider besides being a composer and musician?
Well, you know, as a little kid, Dave had a very bad back, which he broke his back in Honolulu after World War II was when he got a club job in Hawaii, and it actually affected the way he played. He used to play much more of like sort of trying to be like Art Tatum, a lot more technical stuff. And after his vertebrae got broken and all that kind of stuff, he became more of a chordal composer kind of player. And actually, now I'm talking about that, and I lost the thread of your question. I'm embarrassed.
Oh, that's okay. And I almost forgot what my question was, but I actually do remember it, which was, where did you ever consider another occupation besides being composer musician? Yeah, go ahead.
So, now I know how I got there. Okay. So often, when he would go out to play a concert, he had a very bad back, and he'd say, "Hey, Chris, you want to go on the road with me? You got to rub my back. That's the deal." So I sit in the back seat and rub his back all the way home, you know, on his shoulders and stuff. But you know, I would see him, you know, play music, create joy, see thousands of people love what he was doing, and you know, it just seems like, wow, this seems like a pretty great way to spend this lifetime. You know, you're not harming anyone; you're lifting their spirits. And oddly enough, I would say from those, that dual experience. If I weren't a musician, I probably would want to be a chiropractor after that experience.
You've already got half the training there, right?
That's right. And actually, my sister recently got a degree in massage therapy.
Oh, there you go.
So, if there's truth in what I'm saying.
Well, it's interesting because your dad, I guess this was back in the 50s, had some albums, Jazz Goes to College, Jazz Goes to Junior College. Obviously, this connection to college, I guess, students and also settings. And here you are working with the Temple University Symphony Orchestra. It seems like kind of coming full circle.
Yeah, there's a lot of things that come for full circle. I mean, if you live long enough, you start seeing these amazing rippling patterns. Like when I was in my 20s, you know, I would read some philosophy that would say, like, oh, grasshopper, when you drop a pebble in the pond of the universe, the ripples go on for eternity, you know, or something like that, you know. And you think, well, yeah, it sounds like a nice crock, you know, but you live long enough and you really see that all these things do happen. And you never know, you know, how the last ripple is going to bounce off some wall and come up and greet you and meet you in a nice way. Like, you know, Robert's been so great on this whole project, and it's, you know, off the ripple of Dave's record being in his father's house. It took generations to bear fruit, but the seeds were planted.
Well, I'm wondering to you, Robert Strucker, how much you get to perform yourself?
Well, not much. Really, right now, spending so much time working with students and wonderful faculty we have at Temple, and the administrative side takes a great deal amount of time. But being able to work on this kind of project and putting sort of the pieces together to make this kind of project happen is so rewarding, especially being able to work with such terrific people.
And as executive producer, I mean, I think that can mean many different things depending on who's doing the job. How do you see that part of your responsibility?
Yeah, I have the fun part of sort of seeing the big picture and trying to get all the pieces together and also pushing, being very tenacious that the project's complete. Right. Doing recording, the whole music industry, it's a tough industry, and you need to have a lot of tenacity, very clear ideas of where you're going, and have wonderful people around you. We have terrific staff, Linda Fiore, who works in the office, really helped this project so much, and Louise Biava, Terrell Stafford, and all the faculty at the Boyer College. Mm-hmm. And my role is to put this all together and create these opportunities for everyone.
And what was it like to perform this at Lincoln Center?
Oh, it was just one of the highlights of my life. Again, having Dave Brubeck sit right next to me, the family from Ansel Adams family to my left, and then seeing the students. And that was the best performance of the piece. The students just nailed it. And seeing their face, they knew it. That you could see the passion in their eyes on that stage. And then also, I kept looking over at Dave, and he was smiling, and I could just tell he was just enjoying the moment. So it was one of the most rewarding moments of my professional career.
And Chris Brubeck, I'm curious about the response from Ansel Adams' family. What do they make of this piece of music?
Well, Ansel Adams' children, who are, you know, now they're in their 70s or more. Right. I mean, they're not children anymore, but that's lineage-wise, that's who they are. I mean, they're big fans of the piece and very supportive. They helped give me photographs from their personal family photo archives, or for pictures of, you know, Ansel Adams as a baby, and, you know, finding one where he was playing piano and all that kind of thing. And I got to say that as a composer, you know, working a lot of different projects, one of the big thrills of my life is here you are, you're thinking about you're writing music and you read Ansel Adams' autobiography, but then you cut forward from 3 years from when you first read the book till you're writing the piece till it's being performed with the Monterey Symphony, where we're at a special reception at Ansel Adams' house, whose back deck overlooks the Pacific Cove. And, you know, it's the people on the board, and we're sipping wine, looking at the Pacific literally below us. And behind us is Ansel Adams' dark room. And I'm going, holy moly, you know, how did this come from being a concept and an idea from Susan Carson, you know, supported by Robert Strucker and other people from other orchestras? Yeah, this sounds like a good idea. And then you're actually in a three-dimensional new reality because of all this comes true. It's really such an adventure to be a composer.
In the liner notes, you quote Ansel Adams, Chris, and I almost didn't quite understand what he was saying, but I thought it's so provocative. He said, photographs are, in a sense, composers, and the negatives are their scores. You understand that?
Yeah. Well, what he said, you have to know about his dark room techniques. In the same way that a a musician would write the score, and the conductor in an orchestra can interpret those elements to make, you know, music at a fast tempo, the slow tempo, you know, although it's indicated. It's in the execution. And what he was saying is that when he takes a photograph, I mean, he's got a plate in the camera, but he would spend sometimes 2 days in the darkroom to develop a picture just right. It's how you shade things. And his writing is filled with these references to music and composition and structure and how they're the same. And that's one of the reasons why about three-quarters of the way through the piece, we have this section which is sort of the Ansel Adams miniature section. Like I said, you think of him in big mountains, but here it's just pictures of leaves and flowers. And then the music is very Bach-like, very precise, not grand and big, you know. It's just delicate and very, very intricate and precise, like as he would see the veins in a maple leaf.
Well, Chris Brubeck, it's been such a pleasure. Thank you so much for joining us today in Radio Times.
Oh, it's been my extreme pleasure, and it's such a happy occasion to chat about, too.
Indeed it is. Chris Brubeck, performer and composer, joining us by telephone. Robert Stroker, thank you very much as well. And he's Vice Provost for the Arts, Dean of the Center for the Arts at Temple University. For more information about Radio Times, including information about Facebook, Twitter, email, the archives, podcasts, satellite radio, go to whyy.org/radiotimes. And Kevin Griffin, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times, the show produced by Susan Greenbaum, Patty McMahon, Dennis Devine, and Debbie Builder. I'm Marty Moscoane. Thank you so much. Closing things out with music of Ansel Adams, America.